Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome inside the Celtics Lab podcast. I'm Justin Clinton here with Alex Goldberg and Cam Tabatabai. And today we have a special guest to talk all things cap-related during this critical offseason for the Boston Celtics. With Hoops Hype's Yossi Goslin. How are you doing considering it's election day, considering, it's when we're recording not exactly the easiest time to focus on things. Maybe it is the easiest time to focus on things besides politics.
Yeah, I mean, we spent the whole summer wondering if sports were a distraction in our society or not. And I don't know if we answered that question, but I'll take a 40-minute distraction right now and in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. I was fucking pumped for this all day. I also just got some good news that my cat is not as disease-riddled as I thought he was.
So that's great. Tough.
I'm feeling good. Obviously, the world may or may not be crumbling around us, but I have a lot of vodka and a healthy cat, so can't complain.
I'm in Mexico right now, and I left my dog at a PetSmart, and when I left him there, they already boarded up the window. So as long as we have healthy pets at the end of this, I'm happy.
Right? Seriously. Well, so we have two people in Mexico for a Celtics podcast. That has got to be a first, or at least in English anyway. But we have things to talk about. The cap, $132 million estimate. I mean, is this what it's going to be? What does it mean? Yossi, what are your thoughts on what this cap means? Just let's start with the NBA, more of like a short-term window, like this season. What are we looking at from these projections, and how reliable do you think they are?
Yeah, so right now it looks like things are going to roll over. The same cap and tax numbers will be most likely equal to what they were in the last season. And just about 20 minutes ago or so, we did get an update from Shams Charania where he reiterated that most likely the numbers will roll over. He first mentioned it sometime last week. He wrote about an update with Michelle Roberts, and he basically reiterated the same thing today. And the players are hoping for an increase so they can make some more money. But because of the escrow issues, what Sean's reporting is that they're probably going to agree on spreading the escrow over 3 years. To do that, they don't want to incur more debt. So they don't want to increase the any of the cap or tax figures, even if that means that players won't make as much this summer. So
Yossi, for any of our listeners who are unfamiliar, can you just give us a 10-second definition of escrow as it pertains to the NBA?
So usually on a normal season without coronavirus, the all player salaries, 10% of it is held in an escrow account. That is done because you have to make sure that that the players and owners get a 50-50 split. If players get all their money, then it's possible that they get overpaid if revenues fall short of projections. So what they do is they withhold 10%. And then at the end, they see if the players didn't get as much, they'll cut them a check for the difference. Or if the players did get overpaid, then they hold some of that 10%. When coronavirus happened, they increased it to 25%. And there have been a lot of negotiations about potentially increasing that to about 40%. Shams mentioned in the article that the owners actually wanted unlimited escrow, the one that just came out, which
of course they do.
Which is like, that's definitely a good leverage to throw at the players. But then they ended up settling. The players want to do 15%. Owners want to do 25%. They're going to meet somewhere in the middle, according to Shams. So, and then spread over the 3 years. So I still don't totally understand it because this report just came out. I'm sure we'll learn more about it once they actually agree on to resume the seat to start the season and all that. Mm-hmm. But this is still even foreign to me. to fully understand what it means to spread it out over 3 years. But
oh, you don't remember this from the last pandemic?
No, that was too long ago. That's my bad.
It happens. It happens. So, like, what do you think the immediate effects of this are going to be? Are we going to see teams make any kind of like surprise cost saving moves, considering the cap isn't going to be going up as expected? Or do you think people are just going to kind of suck it up for the short term in general, not necessarily specific to the Celtics because they have kind of a unique situation, but like around the league, are we going to see people like start like selling off rosters to try to save from tax, or is it kind of wait and see?
Well, it depends on the team. There are a number of teams, which does include the Celtics, who are already in the tax if it stays at $132 million. Mm-hmm. If you're a team like Boston or Brooklyn or Golden State or Philly that are already way into the tax, you might want they might want to just kind of stand pat, or maybe even reduce costs depending what ownership wants. If you're a team that's kind of a middle market, but you're kind of under the tax, for example, I'll bring up Utah. They're about they're not too far from it, and you know they're going to sign their first round pick. They want to re-sign Clarkson, but maybe they won't have enough room to use their MLE. And this was a lot of people feel that because there's not too many cap space teams that this is going to be the summer of the mid-level. But it's possible that if the tax doesn't rise, that a lot of teams might not even do that. There might be some teams that all they do is sign their first round picks and that's it, just because how tax averse they might be. But, you know, you brought up, okay, well, we see a lot of cost cutting. Well, I'm not sure, because if a lot of teams are trying to cut costs, then who's going to be taking that money? It seems like everybody wants to cut costs. You got very few teams with cap space, or very few teams in general that do want to take in money. It just feels like if the numbers don't rise, we'll have more inaction than cost cutting, just because supply and demand.
I think one thing that'll be potentially interesting is, this is really inside baseball, but depending on where owners and ownership groups make their primary income, you could see a different appetite for absorbing the tax penalty. So the Celtics, for example, Steve Pagliuca works at Bain Capital. Bain Capital has done tremendously in COVID, and a lot of really white collar Silicon Valley-esque or Wall Street-esque companies are doing, for better or for worse, pretty damn well in the COVID situation. Other teams, if their owners perhaps make their money in, say, hospitality or food, like the owner of the Rockets.
I was just going to say that.
I could see a prolonged pandemic experience really cutting into their personal asset count and bottom line. And suddenly, maybe the appetite for spending on your NBA team, which maybe isn't necessarily a money-making enterprise, especially not during COVID, could change teams' plans. So for anyone who isn't a Celtics fan, I think the Celtics are insulated just because the team ownership seems to be doing okay. But I guess anyone listening who isn't a Celtics fan, I would interrogate what your owner's assets look like and where they might be making their income, because that could actually dictate their willingness to spend in the tax.
Cam, I totally agree. And I think another thing that has to be considered when we're talking about cap figures for this year, as well as kind of how teams choose to proceed in free agency for this season, is the 2021 offseason, which is going to be loaded with star free agents. And I imagine a number of teams such as Dallas, Miami, Toronto, Golden State, many others will likely be prioritizing setting themselves up to have both assets that can entice free agents in that class, as well as the cap space to potentially sign certain very large Greek men, if need be.
Yeah, we could see a lot of one-year deals, like from 2 years ago. In 2018, there was a lot of one-year deals. Maybe we'll just end up behind the cycle where 1 year we have the big signings, and the next year just very small deals to prepare for the next big free agent class.
So how long do you think revenue might be down? I know that they are definitely projecting it not to be back up. clearly there needs to be some link between butts and seats at arenas. Presumably after this season, I hope to God, there is the ability for us to do things like that again. Is that going to be like an immediate return to like cap normalcy once that starts happening? Is there going to be some kind of a delay, do you think? Like, what's your view on how long you think this could be down?
I would have to say definitely has to do with the fans. So season tickets and what money they spend while at the games. I believe that's about 40% of revenue of BRI.
Yep.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but
that's about my
that's opinion. Yeah, that's almost 50%. So I feel like that's got to be it. Once the fans are back in, then we should start to feel some sense of normalcy.
Yeah, to that end, the NBA has 5 more years of that massive 2016 contract. So if television ratings are down, it's going to take at least a couple of seasons for that to actually affect the NBA's bottom line. So right now it is a lot about recapturing in-person revenue or expanding revenue with deals for daily fantasy and legalized gambling and things like that.
You think it's going to be useful at all, really? I'm sorry, Alex, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No worries.
I'm wondering if, I saw something to the tune of like $80 to $100 million, which is a lot of money, but I mean, when we're talking like losses in the billions, it almost seems like an afterthought.
Yeah, I'm seeing, I just did a little bit of Investopedia research that the jersey advertisements have only brought in about $9.3 million, which is, again, nothing to sneeze at. These are
not a small amount of money, but yeah.
No, but in the context that the NBA is operating, I mean, every little bit counts. It's not, I think, a black and white issue. The stuff with China hurt. The illegal streaming hurts. Certainly fans not being in seats or 50% capacity hurts. And whether or not these are avoidable or important problems to have, it seems like we are a far cry from the trajectory we thought the NBA was on back in 2016, 2017.
So, Cam, you mentioned something there that I think is really important and could also be a path for the NBA recouping not all, but at least some of this lost revenue, which is that the NBA, in a weird way, also has an opportunity to become the dominant streaming sports league. I really think this is the case, especially if they partner with an already high engagement streaming platform, something like YouTube or Amazon. I think this is kind of the white whale that Adam Silver has been chasing for a while now, especially given the demographics of the NBA's audience, which typically skews younger and less interested in buying traditional cable TV packages. So I think you're almost certainly going to see the NBA trying to find ways to make up some money via streaming revenue. And you could see them get pretty creative with that.
So one of the things that I think goes well with that, that would also be a good way to get some cash back into the system, though I don't necessarily think that other factors are going to make it happen, at least for like this upcoming season and the season after, but maybe a little sooner than the 5 to 10 year frame that I was hearing for the idea of expansion, particularly into my home market here in Mexico City. They need some more data before they make a move that big. But I mean, particularly considering the revenue situation right now, it's got to be attractive to think about opening up a media rights deal for a ready-made market with 20 million already existing fans. You know, I mean, that's got to be at least something of a double digit millions, if not more. I have no idea how to value these things, but I'm just, you know, just guessing. There seems to be a lot of money to be made in expansion in terms of franchising rights and all of that. Is there a chance that all of these things kind of come together and creates kind of like a revenue jump, kind of akin to going back to 2016 in the media rights contract that sparked this whole cycle of boom and bust cap space seasons? Like, what are the chances of like a revenue jump coming into it? Is that kind of the point of this whole 3-year escrow plan, Yossi?
I feel like even if the pandemic never happened, the NBA still needs to find a way to capitalize on a lot of the changing consumption behavior. So you mentioned how younger people, so I'm 27, I guess you could count me as that demographic. And, you know, I'm guilty of not watching a lot of games from start to finish. I feel like this is an issue that is still ongoing because ratings have been a big issue, especially when during the bubble and the restart. That is maybe now the pandemic will push the NBA more to find a way to capitalize more on it. But unless they could find a way to get people like me to watch games more from start to finish, like they want, then they got to find a way to really capitalize on, like, you know, social media engagements, you know, YouTube clips, all those things. And I'm sure they will. I'm sure there will be a way, and all the other sports leagues will follow suit. But yeah, just that's a very important one they need to figure out.
I would love to
Seems
see
to if, me.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Okay, my turn. Finally, no, I'm just kidding. I've been pushing this idea for a free version of League Pass, except for there's commercials. You know, you have to watch commercials, and they're commercials, and they make the money directly from the commercials, and everybody's happy, and you get to watch League Pass. And yes, it's annoying because there's commercials, which is, if you don't want them, you pay them more money.
I think that's a really good idea, and one that I would not be surprised if the NBA pursues relatively soon. I think people ultimately do kind of want to view television in the same way, just without having to pay for cable. I don't think there's going to be a lot of objections to a streaming service that features advertisements here and there. And I mean, if you look at like Hulu, for example, which has a ton of members who don't pay for premium Hulu all across the world, and they watch, you know, 3 ads per episode, then I think there's real potential there, Justin, and something worth looking into.
Yeah, it seems to me that baseball is down, hockey is down, the NBA is down. Other than the WNBA, things were dramatically down. I think the key to success for the NBA is to never compete with the NFL, because they're just not going to win that market. It's still the case
finally
that
we know.
Yeah, there's no more thought experiment there. It's preseason games were outdrawing and NBA playoff games. So they really hope they make good COVID decisions and build in flexibility for possible stoppages of play. But I'm so sure that the conversations that are being had include how can we never go up against the NFL again, because it was pretty profound.
What about the Celtics specifically, like in the short term? How, or does this impact how the team might be approaching, for example, the biggest decision in the room, which is Gordon Hayward's future with the team? I mean, are they going to be more reticent to re-signing him to any deal, or is it only going to be something that they consider? Like, how do you, Yossi, envision Gordon Hayward's future because of these projections?
So one of you mentioned how the Celtics, their ownership is probably doing a lot better than other owners of. It is definitely a team by team thing. And I think the Celtics can be considered one of those teams that, probably won't affect them too negatively. I think no matter what, they're probably going to be a tax team unless Hayward were to leave. But if they're going to have him come back and they're going to run most of the team back, they're for sure going to be a luxury tax team, even if the tax were to rise as initially projected, they're probably still going to be a tax team. So I don't think it changes too much. I guess the bigger question is more so Gordon Hayward with his option. I think that will have a much more profound effect on what the Celtics do.
Yeah, see, I totally agree. I think everything that I'm hearing from the Celtics front office up to this point suggests that they want to keep Gordon Hayward on the team. They value him as a player, and I think they envision him as part of a championship core alongside Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kemba Walker. How long that's going to be for is a little up in the air. I think they were hoping that he would kind of just opt in to the current structure of his deal, or that he would negotiate with them on kind of re-signing in a longer term sense. But I think Danny Ainge and company want to keep Gordon Hayward in a green uniform and would prefer not to have to trade him or see him walk in free agency. And I do think ultimately a lot of this decision comes down to more Gordon Hayward's personal choices as to whether he wants to stay with the team than whether the Celtics want to keep him or not.
Yeah, I'm not Gordon Hayward and I'm not Robin Hayward, so I can't make this decision, but Gordon Hayward has made $180 million in his NBA career thus far. Opting into a $34 million contract for 1 year feels like some level of stability that probably they can afford. And I think, I mean, we're so desperate for Celtics content, but it seems to me that this Celtics team was a few bad fourth quarters away from a trip to the finals, apropos of bad Kemba Walker knees and an ailing Gordon Hayward. So if I'm Hayward and if I'm the Celtics, I don't really see a reason to not run it back and just tinker on the margins. But if this is kind of like an Al Horford situation where the Celtics don't seem like they want to have a future with Gordon Hayward and he wants to get the years and the money, I mean, good luck to him in Indiana. That would be great for him.
You know, before free agency started, it felt that with Hayward, you know, he had another injured season. He played really well when he was healthy, but he kind of went through stints where he played so well. I thought he was playing at an all-star level in the beginning of the year, and then he got hurt, came back, was a little slow to get in the groove again, and then he got really good and then would get hurt again. And that seemed to happen like 3 or 4 times this season. So, but overall, he did have an injured year, and there's not a lot of cap space. Teams that do have cap space aren't that exciting, like New York or Charlotte or Atlanta. So you would think that the combination of those things, that the smart bet just for him to opt in, get that $34 million, run it back, and go from there. But the more I think about it, and I do think there is somewhat of a possibility that maybe he will opt out, just because even though he did have a somewhat of a down year with the injuries, if a team like Atlanta, for example, were to offer him a max contract or a near max contract, that's one suitor right there. Now he can try to get the Celtics to offer him something similar. And for a guy like Hayward who's 30, this could be his last chance to get another big contract like this. Yes, next summer there are going to be a lot more teams with cap space, a lot more contenders. And, you know, assuming he's healthy, then he should have his pick. But at the same time, there's still so much uncertainty. That's a year away. We don't know what the cap's going to be like. So I do think that if there is, I just do think he's going to seriously consider all his options this summer to really maximize his earnings, because you just don't know what's going to happen.
I definitely feel like that's right. And, you know, I mean, you kind of put it out there, but I think many people, including myself, consider this to be a relatively weak free agent class in terms of star talent. And Gordon Hayward, you know, while he has suffered some injuries and had kind of inconsistent play in Boston, he's also shown at times that he is capable of being a very high level NBA player. And I think if I were Gordon Hayward's agent right now, I would be telling him, you're going to have a better shot at getting a max or close to max deal in this weaker free agent class now than you would be next year when you're going up against the likes of Giannis, Kawhi, et cetera. So it wouldn't surprise me if he tests the market, but I do think that the Celtics are going to try their darnest to keep him.
There is a situation too where he could, you know, he has more leverage, I think, than people are giving him credit for too, because if he really does decide that he wants to play the market like that, and he does get an offer from a team he would need a signing trade for, the Celtics can say no, but then he's probably leaving at the end of that, and you have to deal him and you will have to get whatever you can get for him, because at that point, everyone in the league will also know you have no leverage. So at that point, you're just going to basically be getting whatever you can possibly fit to keep some flexibility over the cap. And that's exactly the kind of situation everyone, I think, is trying to avoid. How does this change Boston's attempts to build a contender? I mean, do they look at this and see that there is a real possibility for a sleeper like Atlanta, or maybe Miami says, hey, we'll give you the full max this year, with a non-guaranteed second year. And then, you know, if things don't work out, then we'll just, you know, re-sign you for less.
Sorry, did you say if Boston would offer that, or if a different team
would offer that? If Miami would offer that to him. So in other words, he could be kind of like a one-season trade exception, I guess you could say. That's not really the right word for it. A one-season placeholder for the cap they would want to use to lure ostensibly a better star, but, you know, he would at least have a guarantee of the same amount of money he would get, plus a potentiality for a longer, bigger term deal, a longer term big deal than he would otherwise get.
I think it's complicated for the Celtics in that if he does opt in, their ability to make trades is going to be really difficult. And so there's something, I mean, Danny Ainge is, you know, he's traded Danny for a reason. Getting Hayward at like a $20 million rate also opens up a lot of trade options for the Celtics, because then they have different tiers of types of contracts to play with. So there is kind of this like galaxy brain world where, say, Miami doesn't offer him the max, but offers him 3 years at 20 million. There's a world where that's beneficial to the Celtics insofar as then they put a $20 million contract on their books, which I know that Hayward and Brad Stevens have such a strong relationship, and Boston has to be weary after Isaiah Thomas of being a little too quick to trade star players. But having that kind of mid-level contract to trade could be helpful, because right now, outside of the top heavy star players, Marcus Smart, I think at like $12 million is their next kind of hefty contract.
Yeah.
So making moves is pretty difficult. To having Gordon Hayward at 3 years and $20 million, not only do you maybe have Gordon Hayward in your employ for a season and a half, but you also have a contract that's a little more movable.
So I want to push back a little bit on this whole comparison to Isaiah Thomas, because Isaiah Thomas did not opt into the final year of a contract knowing that there was an excellent chance he might be dealt if he does. You know, like Gordon Hayward knows what's going on now. You know, he knows what the decision tree for the front office is going to be, because if his agent isn't explaining to him very clearly, that's malpractice, and I doubt that's what's going on. So I'm 100% confident that he is walking into this very aware of what can happen if he makes those decisions. And equally, I think the same thing is happening. I think that everyone wants to work together, and I think everyone wants to keep him here. I think, you know, there isn't someone out there that is going to be a clear upgrade. The best possible situation is exactly what you were talking about, Cam, like getting him in a longer term, cheaper deal. But, you know, we've beaten as collectively as the Celtics media this idea to death at this point. So maybe we should talk about how the cap situation is going to be dealing with the next kind of big decision tree in the room, that being the draft. Like, what are they going to do, if anything, differently based on the draft, knowing that every salary they bring on gets them closer to a repeater tax and will cost them more once they hit it?
So I have some thoughts on this. Kevin O'Connor mentioned earlier today in his mock draft that Celtics are looking to trade up, and they are dangling all three of their first round picks to do so. They're currently not getting any responses based on what KOC has to say. But I think that that makes a lot of sense for the Boston Celtics, both for cap reasons and simply for the structure of their team, how it exists right now. The Celtics have a lot of young players that they gave significant minutes to in the playoffs last year. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but adding three new rookies onto this team right now strikes me, at least, as a challenging thing to work out, both in terms of rotations and minutes and in terms of cap room. It would make a lot more sense if the Celtics were able to trade up, say, to the eighth, seventh, or sixth pick even with the picks that they have, and maybe even involving moving one of those younger bench players to try and kind of consolidate those assets into one person that they only have to pay one rookie salary for. Because, you know, as we've said before, the Celtics are, they're going to be a tax team, and every dollar matters for tax teams. So I could see a scenario, and I think the Celtics will be actively pushing for this scenario to try and trade some of those picks, either to get a higher draft position this year or maybe just to move them into next year, which is a classic Danny Ainge draft move when he doesn't know what to do with too many picks, is to just roll them over.
What would you do, Yossi?
So you mentioned the repeater tax, and I don't think that the draft picks really have much of an impact on whether they're going to get closer to that or not. It's more, you know, if you consolidating your picks into a higher one, yeah, you will save a little bit of money in the short term. It's not really going to make a big impact on increasing the tax or not. But I do agree, though, that, you know, the Celtics have had all these, they accumulated so many picks since 2015. They did the Garnett and Pierce trade, Ainge has gotten so many picks, hasn't really turned them into the star, converted them to the star that they hoped. For many years, it was speculated that they would try to turn it into Anthony Davis, but that didn't work out. And it's gotten to the point where their last offseason, they had three picks, and they used some of them, and then they rolled one over, and now they've got three picks again. And it doesn't, each year, it seems like the value of these picks keeps decreasing. So, but yeah, they gotta finally consolidate it into something that can help them win now, or at least into another good prospect that they really believe in. But I just wanna say that you did mention the repeater tax. We did talk about Hayward and how his contract, that could be something that the Celtics want to get a little lower to help keep trying not to make the roster too expensive. But in the long run, it's mainly the Tatum extension that's upcoming. If the salary cap increases next year as it's supposed to, mm-hmm. Let's say a lot of teams right now are going as if next year's numbers are going to be what this year's was supposed to be. Tatum could get about 5 years, 167 mil. And if he gets all NBA again, or MVP, or, you know, one of those defensive player of the year, then he can get an even bigger max contract. It'd be 200 million a year. And that's where the future of Hayward and Kemba could really get a little complicated.
To touch on that, Kemba comes off the books in 2022-23, assuming he ups, and I'm sure he will, given it's very unlikely he's going to be getting the same kind of offers that he was getting this time in free agency at that point of his career. Should we be looking to replace Kemba Walker now? Is that something you think we might be able to come up with, kind of, you know, juggling star players like him and Gordon Hayward? Like, how would you approach this from a cap perspective?
I think it mainly depends what happens with Gordon Hayward, because you know, they're going to have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown no matter what. Together, they could be making 50 to 60 mil combined, maybe 70 mil combined. You could talk the ownership into paying another guy like Kemba, who's making 30 mil plus every year. Now, if you're going to have Hayward as well, I feel like in the long run, having both Kemba and Hayward is going to be very complicated. So, you know, we talk about, you mentioned how Kemba, he's coming off the books in 2023. I think in the end, the Celtics will probably have to choose between one of them if Hayward were to resign.
Okay.
Because, you know, as amazing as having these four players are with Marcus Smart, they're like a Warriors light when I see all five of them play. I think it's such an unbelievable team lineup that they put together. At some point, it is way too expensive. Even though I know that the Celtics, it seems like they are willing to pay the luxury tax. At some point, it just seems like unreasonably high.
And sorry, I wanted to jump in here with regard to Kemba Walker. You know, I'll speak for myself in saying that despite kind of the injury concerns and the fact that he's 30 years old and on a max contract, I really enjoyed having Kemba Walker on this team this year. I thought he was a great locker room presence and really helped to kind of push the Celtics a little further than I frankly thought that they were going to go. That being said, I think one avenue that relates back to something we were talking about a minute ago that would make a lot of sense for the Celtics this year is to draft a guard, particularly if they trade up. I think having Kemba Walker's successor waiting in the wings would make a lot of sense for this team. And there's thankfully a lot of good guard prospects in
so Killian draft. Hayes, I don't mean to interrupt, but he seems like the perfect person for us to be looking at just because of the fact that there are other people like Okongwu, Onyeka Okongwu, I could see trading up for, but just if we did do this thing that we are hearing, you know, the biggest open secret really in the NBA at the moment, I don't really see any other particularly good targets in the draft that makes sense in terms of both now and in the future for that sort of a thing. Is there anyone else that we could be targeting that would be a reasonable facsimile for Kemba Walker?
I have a couple of thoughts on that. So obviously one thing that needs to be mentioned here is that he, and this person might go so early that it doesn't matter, but Danny Ainge did meet with LaMelo Ball, that according to some Twitter reports.
Did
that not happen?
No, he was there for Puma, and everyone thought it was. I believe, you know, a lot of reputable people, including some of our USA Today people, were stumped by that as well. So don't feel bad. But no, he was actually just there for a Puma meeting, and I would cry if we do. I'm sorry, I would not be happy. But
counterpoint: Marcus Smart is a Puma athlete, and
true.
Ooh, you never
back
know.
Back channel. True.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, LaMelo seems like an unrealistic target. I think, though, that one name that I've really had my eye on for the past couple of months is Kyrie Lewis Jr., who brings a level of speed and shooting and transition ability to could bring that to the Celtics squad in a way that could be really meaningful, both as an impact player off the bench right now and for the long-term development of the squad. I am really high on this guy, and I think that while a lot of mocks I see are projecting him to go kind of late lottery, you know, in the range of like 10 to 15, I think it wouldn't be crazy to trade up maybe even just a couple of spots to try and get this guy. I think he's going to be a very good NBA player.
So I know the draft is all on all of our minds pretty much constantly, because it's really the only thing that's generating consistent content and selling us hope at the moment. I won't even talk about the election, I promise. But you mentioned Marcus Smart. So his extension ends in 21-22. Are we potentially looking at losing him, do you think, Yossi?
So I was actually looking into that, and with Marcus Smart, he's actually eligible to sign an extension this coming summer. He can add another 3 years, about $56 million. So that's 20% more of the last year of his contract. So 20% of whatever he's going to make in 2022, he can add 3 years. Now, so he'll be, if he were to agree to that, he would make an average of about $18.5 million a year. And if I'm Boston, I think I want to lock him up to that. I think that's really good value for Marcus Smart, especially given what he's given in production-wise this playoffs. And when you compare that to what Tatum and Brown are going to make, and then what one of Kemba or Hayward, I think that if you can lock him up to about 18.5 per year, you do that. With that said, I'm not too confident that Smart's going to agree to that, because he could get more if you were to hit free agency. But that's just something to just keep an eye on that. He is extension eligible. But if he is going to hit free agency and he starts to get offers that increase what his extension could give him, maybe the Celtics could blink and look elsewhere.
Yeah, it seems like there could be some risk on both sides there too, because I mean, Smart decided to tough it out last time, and he kind of got burned a bit. I mean, it's great for the Celtics, but he's definitely on a below market contract now. And I could actually see him really going either way on that, considering the fact that you know, everyone is going to be going onto the market at the same time. And while Marcus Smart is an excellent value contract, does he necessarily want to, you know, go at it again, particularly with so many free agents timing their free agency to hit the market on that particular cap space rich offseason? Speaking also, Jaylen Brown is going to be coming off the books in 2022-23 as well, if I'm not mistaken. Is there anything we should be thinking about in terms of, you know, the timings of these core pieces coming off the books in the long-term future, or really anything else we should be thinking about in terms of Celtics cap futures?
It's hard to tell right now because the Celtics still need a lock of Tatum, and they got to see what's going to happen with Hayward. I think once those two situations are figured out, then we could really start to look way ahead into there. You know, Smart will also play a part of that. But right now, I think you don't need to look that long term. Right now, I think mainly the next 2 years is what we can realistically look at for how the Celtics, I think over the, like what they're this year in the following season, what the financials are right now, that's what the Celtics will shape their decisions off of for now.
And I'm just going to jump in here and say that I think the Celtics' number one priority above everything else should be to sign Jaylen Brown to a 15-year, however much money he wants, contract. Jaylen Brown fucking rules, and I really hope that he's on this team for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
I don't know. He wasn't wearing a mask at his birthday party. That really bothered me.
I don't care.
Yeah, I think, not to be like more of a Debbie Downer than that, but there were whispers that this past season was perhaps the Celtics' best chances to win a title. And I think Yossi's right. It's probably too premature to make guesses about what the team looks like in 2 or 3 years, just because the NBA, the only change in the NBA is constant. But I do wonder if this coming season is kind of make or break, because there are some really tough decisions down the pike that this year, even though there are some pretty big decisions looming large, they're relatively simple.
Yeah, I think if we find ourselves choking in the Eastern Conference Finals again, I think just about everything is on the table. So what are we working on before we get out of here? Yossi, I just saw an excellent piece about James Harden potentially going to Philadelphia from you recently. Anything else you've been working on?
Yeah, so I'm working with Hoopstype and USA Today on all salary cap type content. So you could find me there. You could find me on Twitter on @YogiMane, YoggiMane. So yeah, mainly just almost all salary cap stuff. I'm really into it. I'll post salary cap updates on Twitter as transactions happen, or, you know, some, let's say, so for example, when the last week when Morey joined the Sixers, I decided to write about the possibility of what if the Sixers want to trade for Harden. I wrote about how that can happen under salary cap rules. And then today we saw Shams mentioned that the Sixers will at some point try to pursue a trade. So if you want to learn more about all the mechanics for how these moves get made, I write about all that stuff.
Excellent. Alex.
So I am procrastinating on a piece about the Celtics' approach to the draft. That's something that's coming down the pipe. I have a lot of thoughts on that, as you might have already guessed by listening to this podcast, in particular, how they're going to address the guard spot, the backup guard spot, and the center position, which has been much talked about on Celtics media, Twitter, etc. So that should be coming whenever I get around to, you know, grading all of my students' stuff and then doing that. And I also want to write a kind of a piece about the NBA's short-lived strike action that occurred in the bubble. Mm-hmm. Which was fascinating to me, both in how it happened and why it happened and how it played out. So you can expect that in, again, whenever I get around to having time to write it.
Where do we find you?
You can find me on OTG offtheglassbasketball.com/Twitter/Instagram. Yep. And, you know, follow me on Twitter at designer_smarf, S-M-A-R-F. I'll just post it there. Cam has been replaced.
Sorry, I was muted. Yeah, I actually just morphed into a pack of small dogs. Yeah, I write over at Celtics Hub. I have a piece that I wrote previewing the Celtics offseason that, because the NBA is kind of stuck in the mud figuring out what the next season looks like, is still valid. I'll still write at OTG Basketball and do some editing there. So if you ever like any of Alex's work, it's probably because I edited it. And
that's
I'm not
correct.
I'm not going to plug my Twitter. It's too much spelling.
Oh boy. Well, you guys know me. I am Manning Celtics Wire, and you can catch all my content there. Maybe if I can ever crawl out of this hole, I will get something up on Off the Glass as well. You can also find my work on Double Clutch UK. And if you like what you hear, please rate us 5 stars. If you do not like what you hear, please go away. No, just kidding. Use the hashtag CLPOD in any tweet, any story, anywhere you can leave a comment. Just let us know what you prefer to hear, how you prefer to hear it. We're always trying to bring you the Celtics coverage you want with the deepest dives. Take care.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.